Now on to my talk. We're going to be talking about the choices the pilgrims made in 1620, having looked at 1620 from the perspective of God's providence. I want to look at much of the same events, at least the same year, from the perspective of the choices that the pilgrims made. The Bible both presents God sovereignly working things out, but then also calling his people to wisely make good choices. And we'll see how they demonstrated prudence and courage, faithfulness. But I want to start with two brief proverbs. I've brought them up recently before. The first is Proverbs 22:3. The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. The other one from Proverbs 28:1. The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. Now, at first glance, these two proverbs could seem almost contradictory. Should we be bold or should we retreat? Well, I think we'll see in the pilgrims' example that they demonstrate both prudence as well as courage in making some of these choices. So there's a lot of choices that we could pick from. I want to focus on probably three or four. I have six here, but some of the first ones are going to spend a little more time on. The first big decision, of course, was to leave Holland. They had already before made the choice to leave England back in 1608. They had just met as a church for about a year when they realized there was no home for them there in England outside the Church of England. And so they had moved to Holland and had lived there for about 11 years or so, or about 12. But William Bradford later wrote concerning the pilgrim leaders there in Holland after 12 years. He said, "The grave mistress experience, having taught them many things, those prudent governors with sundry of the sagest members began both deeply to apprehend their present dangers and wisely to foresee the future and think of timely remedy." Times were changing. They weren't the same people they had been 11, 12 years ago. Circumstances were changing in Holland, and their own community had gone through some changes over the years. And they realized that being one of the simple-minded, just go on and suffer for it, wasn't going to be the case. They had to make a decision for the good of their community. This decision was made with days of prayer and fasting. Bradford makes a point to say that it was not out of any newfangledness or any such like giddy humor by which men oftentimes transported to their great hurt and danger, but for sundry weighty and solid reasons. We weren't just flighty, going about from here to there, hopping about because we were discontent. But he said we gave sober thought to this decision with prayer, with fasting, and with reasoning, deliberation. In time, though, they did resolve to leave Holland and seek a home elsewhere, at least for some of their community. Bradford records four chief reasons in his book. The first is that the difficulties of Holland made prospects for attracting people and keeping people slim. The prospects were slim. Some people had wanted to join them. They wanted to experience the freedom to enjoy Christ's ordinances as he had appointed them. But it was so hard living in Holland that some people went there, they spent all their money, they weren't able to make it and had to go back to England. Some people would have liked to join the pilgrims, but the life was just so hard. They were strangers in a different country with a different language. They were farmers, but now they had to become artisans and, you know, different industries. It was tough economically. They wanted to find a place where people could more easily, quote, enjoy the ordinances of God in their purity and the liberty of the gospel with them. They knew people wanted this. Ideally, people would just do it at whatever cost. But they realized that people had to deal somewhat realistically. And if a better and easier place of living could be established with this same freedom, those hindrances would be removed and others could join their colony. More people could be encouraged to live without compromise. Now, looking forward, I think they succeeded. They did find a place where they enjoyed similar liberty to erect their church on their own biblical principles. And it was tough at first, but after a year or two, it was easier, lots of more even economic opportunity for people to come, a more attractive place that did grow. And thousands of Puritans would follow in their footsteps. And of course, we have America because of it. So they wanted a place that was more attractive for people to join them. Second, even the people who were faithful to the cause, who would endure throughout all suffering, still might by necessity be forced to scatter or sink under these burdens. Old age was beginning to steal on many of them, as Bradford says. He actually mentions the proverb I just read, Proverb 22:3, the prudent see danger and hide themselves. He says they felt like soldiers in danger of being entrapped. You know, if you're on the battlefield and you feel like you're getting flanked and you're in a poor position, you're not able to defend yourself, they might retreat to a place better to attack the enemy. They wanted a tactical move to be able to hold their ground and maybe even to gain ground. Again, this proved to be a solid ground. Those who remained in Holland did fade away as a community. Drawn this way or that, there was no, you know, solid, lasting separatist community that was going to survive those who remained in Holland. Economic pressures, other pressures, it would soon scatter. But those who came to Plymouth planted an enduring colony, and their faithfulness and their suffering was not in vain in the new land. They made something that would last. Third point is that the children had felt the effects of living in Holland, particularly by being burdened with heavy labors. Because it was tough economically for all the pilgrims, the parents said that we were kind of forced to be, just as necessity was a heavy taskmaster to us, so we were forced to be to our children, and making the children contribute to bear their weight, and found that they were becoming resentful at their parents for these heavy labors. They were more tempted to just try to get away from the community because of the hardships that they were in. Plus, there were some bad examples from some of the Dutch youth, and this situation led some of the youth to abandon the community, finding escape as sailors or soldiers, and they also knew that the truce with Spain was expiring in a year or two, and that would be all the more the case, that their community might be dissolved simply by people, their young people, leaving. Well, youthful immaturity ever remained an issue. That never went away. But they probably did better in Plymouth than what they did in Holland. In Plymouth, there was perhaps more opportunities for the youth in Plymouth, and was able to thrive there better. The fourth, and as Bradford says, lastly, but which was not least, a great hope and inward zeal they had of laying some good foundation, or at least to make some way thereunto, for the propagating and advancing the gospel of the kingdom of Christ in those remote parts of the world. Yea, though they should be but as a stepping stone unto others for the performing of so great a work. In other words, they were not on the retreat, just trying to get out of Dodge. They sought to establish a beachhead, to open a new front in the advance of Christ's kingdom. For the growth of English Puritanism, they wanted to establish a place where it could flourish, to evangelize the native tribes that were living there, and they wanted to advance in these ways. And both of those indeed happened. English Puritanism did find a place to plant its roots, to establish its churches, to even erect civil governments in line with its proposed reforms, which they were not able to fully carry out in England. And many of the native tribes did receive the gospel in their own language. And I gave another talk on that in a prior year. I won't get into too much there. But it was, to some degree, a successful mission. One of the first Protestant mission movements, in fact, was there in early New England. They would have to barely survive for a few years before they got around to that. But the Pilgrims Puritans would come and join them, carry on that missionary activity. And America in time became a bulwark of Christianity for the next 200 years of a predominantly Calvinist type. Still many Christians here today. Now, Edward Winslow repeats many of the same points in his account of the decisions that led them to leave. He also adds that they were without protection from England being in Holland. They were without protection of the king, whereas as an English colony, they would be under his protection. They were likely to become less English in Holland, lose their cultural identity. Also, they were unlikely to reform the Sabbath-keeping Sabbath keeping in Holland. It was lax in Holland. They did not keep the Sabbath very well as a culture, and they were unlikely to reform that, but they could do that in the New World. And so he puts it, hereby in their grave wisdoms, they thought that we might more glorify God, do more good to our country, better provide for our posterity, and live to be more refreshed by our labors than ever we could do in Holland, where we were. So obviously our situation today is different, but we can still observe and learn from their prudence, their sober-minded consideration of the dangers that face them, their foresight, and the priorities that they pick, the things that they held to be important. But once they decide to leave Holland, they still have to decide where to go. Where do we go? Now that we're leaving, we have to pick a place. And that wasn't straightforward. There was some that wanted to go to South America and find some of the places that had not been settled there. Imagine if they did. That would have been probably a very different story. Might not have worked out. It was warm. It was rich. Rich soil, rich opportunities, but they also pointed out it wasn't really fit well for them. It was prone to diseases. It was a lot more hot climate than they were used to. So eventually they decided not to go to South America. There was also the idea of going as a Dutch colony to the Hudson River with the support of the Dutch. They might have been a little more prone to help them, but also they would not have been English and less helpful to the idea of getting other Puritans to join them. There was also the idea of going to Virginia, where Jamestown was, where there was already a beachhead of settlements. It was actually doing better at this point. Just the year before, wives had come to Jamestown. People were getting married. The representative government had been established. So the early trials of Jamestown were somewhat past. There's still some ahead of them, but it was looking good. But the disadvantage there is that they could face the same difficulties that they had in England, that people would not allow them to practice their religion as they saw would be biblical. So they eventually came upon the idea of, like Jeff said, being a distinct body with some self-governing authority under the general government of Virginia, but with freedom of religion. So again, they were aiming for perhaps around the Hudson River or so, but they were going to be under English authority. They got a patent from the Virginia Company, but they were going to be their own community. There was also dangers that were in America that caused some people to say this is not a good idea. You have the casualties of the sea. You're going to be prone to famine, nakedness, want, and disease. There's going to be potentially hostile and cruel natives. Stories of their tortures were blood-curdling. And there was also expensive. You're not going to afford this. And finally, there were other colonies that had failed. An example of what could happen. But as Bradford recounts, it was granted that the dangers were great, but not desperate. The difficulties were many, but not invincible. For though there were many of them likely, yet they were not certain. It might be that sundry of the things feared might never befall. Others, by provident care and the use of good means, might in a great measure be prevented. And all of them, through the help of God, by fortitude and patience, might either be borne or overcome. And this is where I think that idea of being as bold as a lion, not fleeing when there no one pursues. They realize, okay, it will be hard. There will be dangers. But they will not be invincible. They will not be inevitable. And we can do things to mitigate them. So let's go ahead with fortitude and patience. Also, they were already in poor condition. They were already exiles. The Spaniards could prove just as cruel as the natives, and in fact, in many cases they did, the Spaniards who were going to be at war with Holland very soon. And famine and disease was also in England and in Europe, just as it was in the New World. So they aimed for the northern parts of Virginia. Well, the next choice they had to make was to continue in this. Once they met with initial setbacks, they came to England. They came with their ship, the Speedwell. They were going to pick up another ship on their way called the Mayflower. But they got off to a very rough start. It took a long time for them to get their supplies in England, to get ready to leave England. Thomas Weston, the agent of the people sponsoring them, proved out to be not entirely reliable with their finances. also the terms of the agreements that had been worked out with the people financing them had been changed. And it was harder terms than they had agreed to originally. One could say that they weren't prudent businessmen, but in their defense, they were vulnerable. They didn't have many choices. They didn't have many options. Plus, they were a risky investment from the perspective of the investors. Not only that, but then the speed well leaked. They left, it leaked, they had to go back. It left even further, and it leaked, and they had to go back. And finally, they decided it's no good. We're going to just go with the Mayflower. Later, they realized that it might have actually been tampered with, and it actually did serve other people well after the fact. But they ended up going then just with one ship. They had to leave some people behind. So with all of that, they got off to a later start than anticipated, rougher weather ahead of them. They weren't going to be able to get their crops in before winter. They knew it was going to be hard. And so would they go on? Well, the Mayflower left filled. They had to leave some people behind because they didn't fit, but those who could fit did go, and they journeyed on to the new world. As Robinson and Brewster, the church leaders, they had sent a list to Sir Edwin Sandys in arguing why they should be able to do this journey. And they said, "You can trust us to carry through on this mission. Why? First, we trust that the Lord is with us, sincerely given ourselves to Him and His service." Paraphrasing here. The second, they said that they were, quote, well weaned from the delicate milk of their mother country. They knew how to live outside their normal comforts at home. Three, they, as a body, they were industrious and frugal. Fourth, they were knit together as a body in a most strict and sacred bond and covenant of the Lord, by which they held each other tied to the care of each other's good. That was their church covenant. They said, we make great conscience of that commitment. We are bound together by that solemn covenant. And then lastly, it is not with us as with other men whom small things can discourage or small discontentments cause to wish themselves at home again. That's how Bradford put it. Why? Well, there wasn't much left for them in England or Holland. Once they pulled up their stakes, left their business, there really wasn't much to return to. So they could be relied upon to persevere to the end. They had essentially burned their ships, and they were a mixed metaphor there because they're going on a ship, but they were going ahead with the program. So the next choice that they had ahead of them was to create the Mayflower Compact. This is after the journey, several months later. September they started, November they come to land. As has already been mentioned, the providential circumstances that led to that point, they sighted Cape Cod. It's we use different calendar than they did back then. So they sighted land on the 9th, which by our calendar is the 19th. They laid anchor at Cape Cod on the 11th, which in our calendar is the 21st. That was yesterday. Like this year, that was a Saturday, and they rested on the Sabbath. They had a Sunday after that, like we do today, and then they started their explorations on Monday. So same lineup as we have this year. But before they landed on the 11th or 21st, however you count it, they signed the Mayflower Compact. Almost all the adult men, 41 in number, signed it. Those who didn't were probably just sailors or were perhaps even sick at the time. In principle, all the adult men of the group signed it, pledged themselves to it, could be held accountable to it, forming them as a government. They already knew the idea of a covenant. They had a covenant with God, which is fundamental. They were covenanted with God and His people through the covenant of grace that had been made with them in the Lord Jesus Christ, that they would give themselves and their seed up to God and to walk in His ways and to the church to be faithful members, to maintain God's worship and mutual edification. That's how they would describe their church, or not just church covenant, but their religious covenant, covenant with God and His people. But then they also would unite with a covenant as a civil body politic under God and under their king. Later, they are also going to keep covenants with their sponsors as well as with the Wampanoag. All of those are described as covenants. So they are well practiced in the virtue of faithfulness and covenant keeping in all of these different relationships. In short, the Mayflower Compact, I'm not going to read it, but to summarize it here, it is a short document, but it defined the goals of the colony so that they would be united on why we are here: the glory of God advancement of the Christian faith, honor of king and country, general good of the colony. These are our purposes in uniting together. Second, it incorporated them as a political body, with the ability to create just and equal laws, ordinances, and offices, like governor, for example, which served those ends that they stated. Three, it mutually pledged everyone to submit to these laws and offices. We all agree to do this together. And fourth, it established shared participation in the government. The people who signed the document then elected the governor. The group of people was the political body that then elected the governor to rule them. And so they created that government, which would be the foundation for Plymouth Colony and a model for governments to come. Well, there's two other choices that I have. I won't say as much about them. One was to settle in Plymouth. That was a choice. That was somewhat of a providential choice. They realized the Cape Cod had deficiency. They decided to check this other place out. They kind of happened upon it and decided, well, this is a great place. They didn't name it Plymouth. It had already been named Plymouth. In fact, I think it was on Captain Smith's map. But they settled there, and it did turn out in God's providence to be a marvelous location for them to settle. And being unoccupied, they brought the ship there on December 16th. They began to build the common house on the 25th. The 25th of December. That's when they started their work on the common house, because they didn't celebrate Christmas. Now, technically, and this is where I decided, should I include the winter or not? Because on their calendar, winter went through March. The beginning of the year was in March. So in their calendar, 1620 would have included all that first winter and death. So thinking of the choices the pilgrims made in 1620, do I use our calendar or theirs? I'll just briefly mention it, though it's probably a more familiar part of the story. But in essence, they chose to show kindness and loyalty to each other. As they reach the land, they begin to settle the land. They are stricken with illness, poor conditions on board ship as the men are trying to build homes on land, short on food, or particularly the kinds of food that they needed. And so about half the company died. And as I've brought out before, at times only six or seven remained well enough to care for the others, including Brewster and Standish. Their church leader, their military leader, are the ones doing all the dainty and necessary offices, homely and necessary offices from which dainty and queasy stomachs cannot endure to hear name, and all this willingly and cheerfully. As the sailors, when they got sick, they didn't really want anything to do with the sick and saw the different choices that the pilgrims made to show kindness in the midst of that difficulty. He said, "Oh, you," one of the sailors, he noticed the contrast, "Oh, you, I now see, show your love like Christians indeed to one another. But we let one another lie and die like dogs." And that was a conscious choice that the pilgrims made, perhaps enforced by habit, perhaps enforced by their common priorities as a community. But it was a choice they made to show kindness and faithfulness to each other as they were tied to by covenant throughout that first winter. Now, all of this would have been to no avail if God had not blessed their efforts. Yet with God's blessing, their labors proved fruitful. Many of their intentions were fulfilled. A small group of principled and adventurous men, women, and children stuck together and established a unique Christian community on these shores. And we all benefit from their labors and would do well to heed their example and vision.